From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk everyday Latin. It may be a dead language, but there are still plenty of Latin phrases we're using all the time. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do every week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petrus and Ross Petrus. Ross Petrus, hello. You are at your home in Toronto. How do you keep cool these days, Ross?
Well, it's pretty easy, Fletcher. I open the windows. It's been really pretty... Okay. It has been really, I mean, everyone's screaming
right.
about it.
I'm done talking to Ross. I'm done with Ross.
It's really not that bad here. I mean, we had a high a couple days ago of the 80s,
Come
but
on
that was
now.
It. It wasn't
Come
a big deal.
On. Okay. Hi, Kathy, someone I can probably relate to a little better. How do you keep cool there in Spain, Kathy?
Other than sweating profusely.
that's my strategy
usually.
It's hot. Usually,
it's,
yeah.
hot. It's hot here. And it's only just begun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now it's only been up in the 90s, early low 90s. So it's like I'm bracing myself because the heat wave's coming this week. So we'll see.
Well, lovely. Anyway, I have something to bring up to you guys. This is something that I've noticed for a while, and I've been meaning to ask you about it to see if you've noticed it too. Someone I know well, someone I talk to every day, uses the word rather as a verb. So instead of saying, I would rather eat pizza, or I'd prefer to eat pizza, this person says, I rather eat pizza.
I rather eat pizza?
I rather eat pizza, as in I prefer to eat pizza. So I'd rather. And I know it's not just me hearing it because this person also writes it. I've seen it in texts, right? So I thought, okay, this is just a little quirk. Somehow this person I know didn't learn it correctly. Whatever, that's fine. And I haven't ever said anything because I didn't want them to be self-conscious or anything about that. But I was with them and some of their friends lately, and I noticed their friends saying it too.
I rather have pizza.
I rather have pizza. Yeah.
That's so interesting.
And the thing is, they're all a good decade plus younger than I am. So I'm wondering, and I hadn't wondered, but now that I'm hearing more people saying it who are all younger than I am, I'm wondering if there's some kind of generational thing going on here and that word is actually changing. Have you heard this?
I have not.
I would have rather, but I think what happens is I would have rather had pizza. So the, you know, rather is, you know, with had, and then you take out the had, I'd rather pizza or something like that.
Well,
happens.
It's present tense, right? Instead of I prefer.
I rather pizza.
I rather have, you know, I've never heard like I rather pizza, but I have heard like I rather have pizza.
Not I'd. That's a,
right. Not
okay,
I. No.
As you well know, Ross and I are right now anxiously typing away at our computers.
Yeah. And as we were talking and as Kathy was giving me some time so I could type too, which we both do. You know, that's a very interesting question.
We're
type,
a good
type.
Team.
Yeah. They would have, they would have rathered her go hang out at parties, where the past tense of, instead of taking the, rather took the ED rather than the verb, which is
interesting.
That's interesting.
I have never heard it in past tense. I've never heard any of them say the past tense, like I rathered.
I haven't heard it. Kathy, have you? I haven't noticed.
No, I have not. But then, I mean, I don't hang out with a ton of young people who I obviously must do this.
But Fletcher, could you say one more time how they used it?
Mm-hmm. I rather eat pizza.
I'd rather. Wait a second. Now here, interestingly enough, now I'm finding that that form of rather was used in the 1500s. Here we have Richard Edwards, who I don't know, of Fortune's Power, published in 1576. I rather be born fortunate than be very wise.
Huh.
And here's another in 1614, a letter saying, I rather had been buried here.
Wow.
And they're rather as a verb in mm-hmm. that sense, rather as a present tense verb.
And I'm going to jump ahead because I'm looking as well apparently web searches suggest that that is becoming acceptable to some speakers. The rather as a verb.
Interesting.
So it must be a generational thing. I mean, I'm not the 1500s people because they're dead. So we'll presume they might have been young. However,
yeah, we assume they're not around. I guess. Yeah.
I think there's like a zombie language thing we should all be thinking about here. It'll be huge.
No, but it is interesting. I mean, you know, fads come and go, and apparently this is coming back, which is interesting. The question we always have, though, is like, finding several isolated examples from the 1500s or 1600s doesn't really mean that it was frequently used or not. I'm curious at the frequency. Here they're saying that sort of thing began in the 1890s again. I don't know. What bothers me slightly with this, when I read to you that they would have rathered her go hang out at parties or whatever that line, the past tense to me sounds vaguely okay. Rather,
I kind of agree. I'm wondering with you. That's a little weird.
Do you? And I'm now really wondering.
That's really weird.
As we're talking, going through my brain, rathered this, or I don't know.
Okay, I just found on a linguistics forum, 13 years ago, someone said in colloquial English, I constantly run across sentences of the form, I rather my noun, verb, I rather my fans not read this. This was 13 years ago, and a lot of people were saying, yeah, I'm hearing this all the time as well. Oh, technically incorrect, but catching on. That was 13 years ago, and I still have not noticed a ton of it. But
that's interesting.
Verbal rather, here's another one. Yeah, I mean.
Okay.
So that means, Fletcher, you're kind of, you missed out on this grand movie.
Yeah, somehow, yeah.
So did we, Ross.
I know we did too, but why not play Fletcher instead?
I would like to say, though, listeners, please, if you hear stuff that you notice is changing, let us know. Because I think it'd be really fun to do like a things we're observing, changes in action.
That's a great idea. That's a really good idea. There are so many changes occurring in English as we speak, different regional changes as well.
Yeah.
If you say something where you live and they don't say it where they live, it's interesting too. So that's definitely. And now we're going to go to something that hasn't changed very much.
Ross, you're really mastering the segues.
That one was good.
Back to that dead language, Latin. We're going to see if Fletcher knows the meaning of these currently used, but still from the old days, Latin phrases.
So wait a minute. They're not. Oh, we threw in, Ross, if you remember, because I objected to only Latin.
I was the one who was objecting to it. I'm getting sick of Latin. So I wanted to hear some other languages here.
So it's like a mixed bag.
Mostly Latin, unfortunately. Yes. We were desperately trying to find non-Latin phrases in English, and we didn't find too many. If anyone knows a lot that are used, send them in as well. Okay, we're going to read the sentence, and you're going to tell us the basic meaning and then the specific Latin meaning, okay?
Oh, Fletcher? Okay, yeah, all right.
And then translate it into three other languages. Okay, fine.
Precisely. And then actually give us a sentence in Latin as well, correct, and then from there. Okay. The mayor appointed an ad hoc committee to study the project.
That's interesting that you said
Canadian pronunciation.
Yeah, exactly. I just noticed.
Yeah. I'm doing that. I'm really trying to go back to the American. I keep whizzing back and forth.
That's okay. You're Canadian too, so you can do that.
Okay. The Canadian appointed an ad hoc committee to study the project.
Ad hoc. Right. Ad hoc is when something is sort of just thrown together. It's just out of the moment, basically.
Yeah, that's very good. Now, give us another quick synonym for this.
Makeshift?
Well, improvise. That's good, though.
Yeah, I mean, improvise.
You've got it completely. Okay. Now, what does ad hoc literally mean?
Ad hoc. To the hawk.
That's pretty good, Fletcher, actually.
Thanks. I got half of it.
Oh, you got hawk is this. So it's to this, with respect to this.
Oh, yeah, it was put together for these purposes. Like, it wasn't like a thing that existed. It's just, we're doing this, and so we need this.
Right.
To this. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Okay, Ross, I have but now it's ad hoc does not imply like jury rig, does it? It doesn't imply like messy, flimsy, does it?
Well, it can't. It depends. It's really more like you're making this from what's available right now. So I guess it could be theoretical, but it doesn't really have that. It has more
it doesn't
of a,
have that
negative. Purpose.
It's not a pejorative. No. It's just, no.
I might have sort of insinuated that, and I didn't mean to. I think those are just the words I used.
But it's more like improvise. You're basically using what you got at hand to put the committee together to do whatever they wanted to do.
As a kid, I always loved the phrase ad hoc. I wasn't quite sure what it meant, but I always loved how it sounded, an ad hoc this.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always did. I think I'm gonna use it more often now. I don't know why, but or how, but I will. The next one is also an ad, because it happened to be alphabetical. Ad hominem. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is not paying attention to any of former President Rodrigo Duterte's ad hominem attacks, saying that low levels of discourse have no place in important discussions.
An ad hominem attack is like a personal attack. It's not based on policy or anything like that. It's an abusive personal attack.
Not necessarily abusive, but you're correct. It's basically an attack on the rival, not on the argument. Usually,
yeah, okay.
I mean, you know, there's like all sorts of technical things. Aristotle had basically the salutio recta, which, and of course, they translated it to Latin for some reason. But salutio recta, which is the right solution, and salutio ad hominem, which is the imperfect or fallacious refutation, because it's you're basing the argument on the person, not on the argument.
I just want to say one thing that interested me about this. Initially, it wasn't a negative. It wasn't quite as loaded ad hominem. It initially meant in the 1500s that you were playing on the emotions of your audience. The homo then was just, then it became the more of the personal attack angle. Like you're attacking your opponent, not the merits of the argument or whatever.
But even if you're arguing to the audience, you're still not arguing the argument. So I think I see what you're saying, Kathy, and I think you're right. But I do think that the idea of focusing on the person, not on the facts at hand, never was a good idea. And I mean, it's a good idea maybe if you want to win an argument, but it's not a good idea if you're trying to be logical.
Mm-hmm.
Ad hominem probably means something like to the person.
Right.
Precisely. Yeah. Which leads me to, like, sometimes you see the term nowadays ad feminem, because people want to talk about an ad hominem attack against a woman, actually. And it means, you know, the same as ad hominem, but it's about a woman only. But the thing that gets me is, first of all, ad feminem has been around forever, because I thought it was a fairly new term. I thought it would have been coined in recent years to, like, make sure we don't get gendered, you know, arguments and things. But the key thing about ad hominem is it's really a genderless word. It's not man. It's, as you said, Fletcher, it's to human.
Mm-hmm. Well, homo really is can mean man, but can also mean person in Latin.
So here's what I wonder. I've never heard ad feminem before, but you saying that makes me wonder, does it not just mean it's attacking someone who is a woman, but it means it's attacking a woman because she's a woman?
I was just about to say that. I think that's a really good argument.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
I think it probably would be. I think it could be used correctly in that sense. You're attacking the woman because she's a woman. I think that's a good one.
Yeah, as opposed to just attacking a woman.
Yeah.
You're playing on sexist stereotypes or whatever to attack a woman. I mean, that would seem like a good reason to use a term like ad feminem. I don't know. Like I said, this is the first time I've heard it, so I don't know that's what it's used for, but it seems like that would be a good term for that.
Which is interesting, because in one sense, ad hominem is sort of a personal thing. You're attacking that person specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Ad feminem in that sense becomes broader. You're attacking womanhood in general, in effect.
Yeah.
This is very interesting.
Okay, the next, I will repeat to you a Time magazine article from 2024, a couple of weeks ago. The data supports the idea that buying a home with friends is becoming a bona fide trend in the real estate market.
Right. Often we say bona fide. I think.
You can.
Right?
It can be pronounced either way.
Yeah. I just want to make sure we were talking about the same thing. I mean, like real, you know, like it's a very real thing. It's bona fide. It's in that sentence. I mean, like you're saying, yeah, this actually exists.
Right. Try to like parse out the words. What does bona mean? What would that mean to you?
Good.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then
fide.
Fidelis.
That's what I was thinking. Yes. That's what I was starting to think. I mean, faith.
Yeah, so it's good faith. Faith. A good faith argument.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And in this case, though, a good faith in that sense is in good faith. In this specific sentence, we have it more like
a real trend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fancy genuine, actually.
It's interesting to me because ad hoc and ad hominem both seem to be, you know, I like using basically good, you know, regular, easy to understand words. And I think ad hominem and ad hoc, though, both serve a really good purpose. I'm not sure this one does.
I don't think it does in this sentence, but I think it does because you talk about things. Well, I always think of, oh, brother, where art thou? And the little girl's going, remember, he goes, he's bona fide. Mama says he's bona fide, which I really like. But to me, bona fides, I mean, it's like, yeah, he's really got, like you're looking at a resume or a CV or something. You go, he's got the bona fides. To me, it means, wow, he's got the real stuff.
I don't think it's particularly necessary, though. I mean, to me, you can use it, but they're quick, easy synonyms for almost every example. Ad hominem, personal attack, doesn't quite fit to me. Mm-hmm. And ad hoc, I think, really kind of comes, both of those just seem amazingly useful. This one seems fine, but it doesn't seem, I don't know.
But it's fun to say.
I don't know, because I always have the problem, do you say bona fide or bona fide or bona fide? Depending on, are you doing a Latin translation? Are you doing one that sounds sort of Latinite? Or are you doing
a regular
English?
I, as a word snob, say bona fides.
I, a lot of times, say bona fide. So, I mean, you know, which I know the Latin isn't that way, but, you know, whatever. Let's go to another one.
This one I don't think is useful at all, but you and
this
I disagree.
This one I completely disagree with you on this.
Okay, we're giving you two words. Well, actually, it's a twofer, but we'll start with the first is de facto. The sentence is, the trend has accelerated under the kingdom's de facto ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, amid U.S. criticism of Saudi human rights violations. De facto.
De facto is the one who is actually doing something, not necessarily the one who has the title, but the one who's actually taking the action.
You got it. In fact, it means literally.
In fact, yeah. Okay.
That's completely correct. Kath and I have constantly, well, you can see how we fill our days, constantly disagree on this one. I think this is a really useful word.
I prefer de facto. De jure, which is the next one, I have never used in my real life.
Wow, de jure.
De jure is correct. And we had a quote from a long time ago from our book, de jure segregation is dead, but de facto segregation is firmly in place, for Foreign Affairs magazine.
Okay, so is this sort of the opposite, like the actual, I mean, the way you just said it, like legal segregation is dead.
Exactly.
Right.
Explicit, overt. But de facto, in fact, segregation still exists.
Right.
It's just that we don't say it. So is de jure like the in name?
De jure is in law, literally in law. Law, legitimate by right of law. And I think both are really kind of useful in the sense of like diplomatic, in a diplomatic context, de facto, like we had that with a de facto leader. The de jure leader would be the king, not the crown prince. Mm-hmm. But it's quick and easy. If you say legitimate, it sounds something like, you know, is
it? No, I like legit better, personally. But then I'm not a Latin
But then you're
girl.
Saying, but then de jure, then in that case, with that sentence, legitimate segregation is dead, but illegitimate segregation, you would say
legally segregation is dead, but come on now, segregation's firmly in place, in actuality.
I like de jure de facto, beautiful back and forth, you know, I think it's more elegant.
I think if you were writing for The Atlantic or something, then saying de jure would probably be fine. I certainly would never use it in conversation. I'm not saying I would turn my nose up at somebody who did, but I never would. De facto, on the other hand, I would.
Yeah, de facto, I would.
De facto, I have no problem with, actually. De jure, I have an issue with.
Okay, Kath?
This, I assume you'll know this. It's cogito? I always said cogito.
Cogito ergo sum.
Oh, sure. Descartes. This is Descartes' famous phrase.
Yeah.
Cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am.
Mm-hmm. We just have to say one thing. He initially wrote that actually in French. It was not in Latin.
Actually, Kathy, I'm going to one-up you on that.
Oh.
I was, Kathy found something where he actually said, je pense donc je suis. But I was reading, he actually never even said that.
Oh my God!
I don't know if this is true because I've never read the Meditations, but they're saying that
everything is a lie. Go on.
That those are later formulations that sort of summarized his philosophy perfectly. But apparently, some people are saying he never said either. I don't know for that for a fact. But
I'm verklempt, as they say in Latin. I'm actually stunned. I studied philosophy. This was like a linchpin.
I wonder. I'm a little skeptical of any of that. But what we do know is that's associated with Descartes.
Meaning,
I think, therefore, I exist.
Right.
Like, there's no way around that.
Right. Well, here's one that we have no problem pronouncing, and I think it's a really useful word, and I'm going to say the sentence first. For people who sat out 2023, hoping for a better market this year, purchasing a home this spring will be more like deja vu instead.
It's deja vu all over again.
Yep.
deja vu, which is not Latin, right?
No,
it isn't. We're talking French now. deja vu is when you feel like what you're experiencing now, it's happened before.
That, I think, is a really useful word, too.
Sure, absolutely. We all have deja vu.
Yep.
And it means already seen.
Do you know the technical word for deja vu?
Oh, I have known this, but no, I don't remember.
I far prefer deja vu. It's promnesia.
I hate that.
It's pro, before, and then amnesia, memory.
Yeah, so before
memory.
I am seeing that I didn't hear this. So they say there's also déjà entendu, already heard.
Already heard. Mm-hmm.
And déjà lu, already read, which I really don't care for.
I hate
like
déjà
lu.
Doesn't it
sound like Desilu Studios?
It does. I'm going to start saying déjà lu. You know, oh, déjà lu.
I think I will too. It sounds so snobby. Let's all do it and report back if people hate us now. Next one is also French. Carte blanche.
Oh, right. That's like a blank check, right?
Well,
I guess maybe that's a little more in money sense. If I have carte blanche, then I can do whatever I want to.
Right. You got it.
Now, why? Where does that come from?
Well, it's white paper, literally.
Yeah.
So the paper is blank, and you could do anything you want on a blank paper. Well, you know, within reason.
Okay.
It's interesting, though. It didn't really start, English didn't really introduce it until the late 1700s. I would have thought it would have been older than that.
Paper was rare then, so maybe.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know why I wondered if it was something a little more specific than that? I was watching a recent adaptation of The Three Musketeers the other day, and one of the characters had basically a pardon written and signed by the king, or maybe it was signed by Richelieu. Yeah, I think it was signed by Richelieu. Mm-hmm. And basically there was nothing written on it except the signature. So like he could do whatever he wanted to.
Ew.
And just write in the crimes. Hmm. And the pardon was there.
So yeah. It's like one more up from the letters of transit in Casablanca.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like basically, I murdered some people. Let me go ahead and write that in. Look, it's signed.
I love Casablanca, but that always really bothered me, those letters of transit thing. I mean, because they were like arresting people right and left. I mean, they cannot even be questioned. Apparently they could. Whatever.
The raw stuff. Still our favorite film.
Don't you dare overthink Casablanca.
I know, you can't.
Really?
Okay, now we're going to go to another word. Moving away from Casablanca, but there's a word that you might have heard in Casablanca. Bete noire. Illiberal Hungarian prime minister is the bete noire of the European Union.
Okay, do you say bete noire, Ross? I say bete noire, and I don't even pronounce French.
I was just trying to make it so Fletcher could hear the word.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it should be noir.
Yeah.
You're saying it wrong.
Noir, I am not.
Bete noire is like a bugaboo. Like,
yes, wow.
Yeah.
That was perfect, Fletcher. Because we were going to bring up bugaboo is exactly what we're going to bring up.
Okay.
as an early English usage of that. Exactly.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, because it technically means black beast.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think about that. The synonym is bugbear and bugaboo, something that causes terror. Mm-hmm. From the obsolete, the bug is a goblin or a scarecrow.
A demon in the form of a bear that eats small children as well.
They were really grim, which reminds me of the Grimm's fairy tales, for that matter. They were very grim with kids stuff in those days. Like, whoa, okay. I'll be
it's
good.
It's a dangerous world.
It is. Know?
Yeah.
But I do think, though, I mean, it's interesting, though, just because, I mean, you know, little kids love dinosaurs, which are big and scary. They didn't have dinosaurs. They weren't aware of dinosaurs in those days. But I think it's the same sort of idea, something that's really big and scary. There is some talk about Bette Noire being racist, but apparently it really comes, the theory is it's more referring to wolves, which would be quite frightening in those days.
Also, I want to add that it didn't enter English until fairly late. The earliest in the OED is 1844, which is pretty late, I would think, for Bette Noire. I say Bette Noire, but I say film noir. Figure that one out. I can't.
So next up is hors d'oeuvres.
Yes.
Okay. Hors d'oeuvres. I mean, I know what hors d'oeuvres are. They're the little things that you serve before the meal, walking around with the trays and stuff and little canapes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But what does it literally mean? Or I don't actually know that.
This fascinating, because I never knew it myself. It's out of the ordinary, outside of the ordinary part of a meal. Because the or
is
outside.
Or is outside.
Isn't it dehors in French?
It's outside, de is from, ouvre is work. So it's outside work. Basically outside, an extra dish set outside of the normal ouvre, work. The normal row.
Yeah.
I mean, work in that sense in French is like, you know, works that your things you're doing.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. No, I did not know that.
I never really thought about it because you just always go hors d'oeuvres. Oh, boy.
You just think
I'll have
of me immediately.
You know? QED is the next.
And maybe a good place to end?
Yes, it is.
Quad, I don't know how to pronounce it, but quad erat demonstratum.
Same.
Right? Very
yes.
good, Fletcher. Yeah. Very good. What was to be demonstrated? That which was to be
literally that which was to be demonstrated.
Yes.
So when would you use this, Fletcher, in your casual conversation?
I would probably slap someone who used this in casual conversation. QED. I am a very, very bad person.
Actually, what really got me about this was the French. French snobs don't say QED. They say CQFD, which I did not know. Ce qu'il fallait démontrer, what was to be demonstrated.
Yeah.
So next time you go to France, you can prove a mathematical theorem and end it with CQFD.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.